Well, welcome everybody. This is Dr. Ray Mitch, and you're listening to the Outpost Podcast, but this is a special edition. I really don't have a script to follow for this particular one. This series is going to be called The Importance of Lament, and I find myself right in the middle of it, and that's what I suppose might make it unique in the sense that I am inviting my listeners to follow with me as I go through lament. And I, you know, we have some strange stereotypes, I think, in our mind when you hear that word. Certainly, the whole idea of lament brings with it something more official than it is. And we think also of kind of the gnashing of teeth and wailing and weeping and everything else. And I want to try to set that stereotype to rest with this series. I don't really know how long it'll go. Like I said, in the midst of it. And I thought, what better way to invite people in spite of the fact that it seems like our culture kind of has a voyeuristic tendency to it, that we like to look in on each other's lives. And on this, I'm willing to be looked in on, I suppose. I'm not really going to be doing it the right way. There is a no right way, and no matter what I have to say or how I say it, it is not meant to be prescriptive for anybody else. But there are a variety of topics that have come to my mind, and you don't often get an opportunity to hear some reflections from anyone really as they're going through this process and what it's like. And so what I want to do is take a little time to give you context and then pick up on a particular topic that I think is important to at least consider. So first, context. I have had a good friend of mine who we have been friends for 31 years, and we have been partners in ministry. We have been friends. We have been colleagues. He had taught at Seattle Pacific University for 32 years, I believe. I think it was 32. And so I met him in what would at least be considered a chance meeting in a shuttle here in Colorado itself. At that time, I was living in Illinois, and Ed was living in Washington State in Seattle, and he was doing or leading a men's ministry called the Master's Men. And he had come because Promise Keepers had sponsored a leadership conference prior to the all-men's conference that happened in Folsom Field. And it made quite a splash at the time. It was probably 54,000 men got stacked into Folsom Field to hear the gospel, to hear inspirational messages about being men of integrity and what it looks like, and people that can keep their promises and follow through. And so in the 80s and 90s, it was a very prominent movement of God, certainly within men's lives. And I was of that generation, in particular the baby boomers generation, where our dads oftentimes were absent or gone, and we really were suffering from the lack of fathering, and we found at least some camaraderie with other men in these conferences. And so what ended up happening is that in 1993, we both climbed into a shuttle that was taking us to a hotel in Boulder, Colorado, and struck up a conversation. Of course, when I say struck up, I didn't. He did. He's enough of an extrovert to do that. And I realized that he was the leader of a ministry that my pastor back in Illinois said, you might want to see if you can look this guy up. And here we are talking. And as the weekend progressed, we had a lot of conversations about ministry to men, and I was in private practice at the time, and just a lot of common ground in a lot of ways. And so that's how we met, and that friendship continued. He invited me on a cross-country trip with him from where we were at the time, which was in Indiana, and he stopped in with a box van, and I climbed in, and we drove from northwest Indiana, right by Chicago, all the way to Seattle, Washington, in the northern route. I think that's 90, that crosses a number of states, including Minnesota and South Dakota and Idaho and Montana, and et cetera. And we had quite the conversations. He was very much used Oswald Chambers' devotional called My Utmost for His Highest. And we would read that each morning and talk. And that was really the launch point, I think, for our friendship. And it continued. It actually continued over the next 30 years. From him inviting me to be a chairman of the board of his ministry there in Seattle. And I served that role until the ministry finally closed its doors. And he would come to Colorado after I moved here. And we would spend time on the weekend talking about life and praying and just time together, enjoying the company and also just the conversation as well. I would go to Seattle, and we'd often hang out at his house because it was kind of a sat in a park that was right on the edge of Puget Sound, and we would talk and walk, and it was my first introduction to Starbucks, believe it or not. And so we would walk around a lake nearby called Green Lake and have these conversations. And I would dream, and he would talk about the realities of ministry and all the other things that were really, we just ranged anywhere and pretty much everywhere as we grew in our friendship. About 2020, somewhere near the pandemic, he had retired by that time from SBU, and he decided to move to Lexington, Kentucky. And they got settled in Lexington, and he began to have pain, abdominal pain, and it came to find out that he was diagnosed with bladder cancer, which precipitated a major, major surgery in Cleveland Clinic to have his entire urinary tract removed. It's called a cystectomy. And he was clear for a few years after that. He really was. And then we had a return. And within within about probably 8 to 10 weeks, he went from my conversation with him, which was in January, to losing almost 88 pounds. And his body was clearly ravaged by cancer. And this morning, he breathed his last two breaths, according to what his wife sent my wife and I. And what I want to reflect on is the lead up, because I think Elizabeth Kubler-Ross had it right when she said that anticipatory grief is not the same as true grief. And I offer whoever is listening an opportunity to talk about that crossover point, because that's what today has been for me. And the anticipatory one was living on the edge and feeling like I was kind of sitting on a bubble waiting for it to burst with the news from Lexington and how he was doing. And I recorded a video for him to say goodbye, and that leads me into what the topic is that I want to talk about. Because ultimately, death has a way of revealing things and beliefs that we hold that we didn't really know we held, or beliefs that we make on the fly in order to ease the pain of the loss. And I have this strange place situation to be in where I teach grief and loss. I am in the midst of teaching grief and loss this spring, and here I am actually walking through it. And the challenge ultimately that I have is not only looking at it as someone who teaches it, but also experiencing it as a person who is in it. And anticipatory grief is not the same as the actual grief. And mine is just in the beginning stages. I just released a book in January called The Seasons of Our Grief, and I literally am in the winter of my grief, where it's a fog. I kind of go through and do whatever tasks need to be done, but I'm not entirely there. It's pretty numbed out and dead feeling. And to some degree, you get a little worried that that's the case, but it is very much a part of that. Now, what's the topic I want to talk about? I think in a lot of cases, we like to put nice clothing on something that is only a reminder of how broken our bodies and how broken our world is. And so we play around with the notion that either I say goodbye to someone or I say see you later. Now, this is where the rub is. In the Christian world, in the Christian community, certainly in the life of faith, when a saint or somebody who is a Christian dies, we know that from a what I would call a big T truth perspective, we will see them later. And that may be true. We don't know that for sure. We don't know a lot about what heaven's going to be like. We want to believe that we will see them later, but we don't know that. And the challenge is big T truth doesn't match the little T reality, and that is saying goodbye. And I have made a point in my career and in my teaching to make it clear that there is such a thing as a good goodbye. And that goodbye is a recognition and an honor of, in honor of the person's importance and impact and significance in our lives. And saying goodbye is an act of parting ways with that person. Whether we choose it or not, that's the reality of it. And it delays our sense of grief that we feel, even if it's numb, because numb is still part of grief. But even if it's numb, it delays our grief by saying we'll see them later rather than just simply goodbye. And when I shot the video that I did to say goodbye to my friend, I made a point of saying just that. I knew that he was on a journey into Abba's embrace. I knew that. And I at the very end, I said, fare thee well, my friend, fare thee well, because it will be that journey into Abba's embrace that he is making. But the goodbye is that we that loved him are left with a profound hole in our hearts from his absence. And that is not a dismissal of the big T truth. If anything, it is an embrace of the big T truth. Because if that were the case, then Jesus would have never wept if he knew, because he did. You look at the situation of him and his friend Lazarus and Mary and Martha, and in a lot of cases, Mary and Martha's words are just like ours. What is wrong with you? If you had been here, you could have prevented it from happening. What is wrong with this? Now, they still added as a kind of a reminder at the end, we know that whatever you do is going to be in God's will. At the same time, what is profoundly impactful about that situation and about that how that is written and portrayed is that Jesus saw his friends, and everybody knows the shortest verse in the Bible, right? He wept. Now, that doesn't quite capture the immense emotional output that represents, because wept is, we think of somebody crying. Well, it was more than that. The description of the original words to use that is translated into English is this emotional explosion, if you will. And we have testimony to that because people around said, look at how he loved him because of all the emotion that he showed around that. So our job isn't to soften the blow. I think our job, in some respects, if you want to call it that, in the landscape of our own grief and our own sense of loss and mourning, is to lean into that and how it feels to us and validate that feeling. And goodbye, the recognition of parting, not a softening of that recognition, but a recognition of parting, is honoring and validating where we are in the absence of that person. And that's what it is. It really is the absence. Because ultimately, one of the biggest challenges, and I suspect I'll probably see it even when I go for the memorial service for him, is I won't be listening, but I'm sure that will happen many times over. When people have their emotions and tears, and tears will flow, and how many people will say, I'm sorry, and what are they sorry for making other people uncomfortable, versus the validation and the honoring of the love that they had for the friend that they have lost, or the husband that they've lost, or the dad that they have lost. And that's, and all the people that Ed touched in his life of ministry and teaching and relationships and all of that. And that needs to have its due. And quite honestly, I think saying goodbye is an honor to the due that it is, that's needed, rather than see you later, which is an informal way of saying, well, I know I'll see you later, so maybe this isn't going to be so bad. No, this is going to be terrible. And in my first book of grief, in grieving the loss of someone you love, what you see is a lot of people write that loss, grief, is like a burn wound, but a psychological burn wound that it takes a while to recover, and it leaves a scar. And it leaves a scar as an indication of the loss that has occurred. And we get so busy at trying to control and contain the pain, and that it takes over our willingness to live in the reality of what we feel in losing somebody that we love dearly. And in the movie Shadowlands, Joy knows she's going to die, and she says so to C.S. Lewis, and it's played by Anthony Hopkins. And he says, I'll manage somehow. And she said, no, it can be better than that. But she also reminded him that the pain now, the happiness now, is part of the pain then. And by the time the movie is over and C.S. Lewis, Anthony Hopkins concludes, and he says, I have been given a choice twice in my life, once as a boy and once as a man, in terms of love. And the boy chose safety, but the man chooses suffering. And that is an act of trust. It is an act of love, and it needs to have its due, even if it's going to make people around us uncomfortable. And I can tell you that is going to happen. The more stories I tell, the more tears will probably well up in my eyes. I'm not going to apologize for my tears. I refuse, because the fierce love that I shared with my friend is not to be apologized for. It was the kind of friendship and love that I have never experienced in my life outside of my marriage even, and of a male friend. And he taught me so much in that I now have the opportunity to pass on, whether it's in a podcast like this or whether it's in my teaching or whatever it might be. But it one of the things that we have is we don't have models, and I sure as heck am not trying to be anybody's model. But at the same time, I think it's worth our effort, and even worth my effort, as hard as it might be, to talk about it, to bring it to the surface, to bring it out for people to, and even if they argue with it, that's fine. I'm nobody's psychologist here. The reality is we're human, and we all are struggling to deal with our humanity. And this is the one thing about death, is that it is a punctuation point at the end of a sentence that we can't get around. It prompts us to start a new chapter, and we don't really want to start that chapter. And I am the first to understand that, and I get it. Part of the reason that I'm doing this only as audio is so you simply pay attention to what I have to say and not the context in which I'm sitting or anything else like that. So that's something worth considering, at least when it comes to grief and grieving and mourning. My anticipatory grief was always feeling a little breathless, and now here I sit with a resolved kind of settledness about that I know where he is, but I also need to find a way to validate where I am. And maybe this is just my own means of catharsis, is to talk it out this way with in this context. And again, it's just to not only benefit the people that might be listening to it, but also just be an encouragement to talk to people as well. And that's I will be doing that as well throughout the days to come. This first day has been a very quiet day. I have been very internal. I have turned inward. I am still considering and gathering my thoughts and everything else. And that's my style. That's just how I do things. You don't have to. You may be a very verbal processor, and that's okay. There are one tendency is not better than another. It just is really how we're geared. And I'm the last thing I want to do is spend any time looking at why, because the why doesn't matter at this point. It's, can I validate the experience as I know it, as I am, and and carry that into the presence of God himself? And I know for a fact that we have the kind of God, whether you know him or not. I don't know who's listening to this or if anybody's listening to this, but I know that I have the kind of God that is unique in the pantheon of gods that are available for people to think about, talk about, pray to, whatever. And that is that the God that I know, the Abba that I know, took on my form just to be able to experience my kind of loss. And that he did. And as revealed in the life of Jesus, he interacted with broken people, and a lot of those broken people were experiencing losses of some sort, whether it was a person like Jairus and his daughter dying, or the centurion and his servant dying, or slave boy dying, or whoever. It was loss everywhere. And you can be assured that God, in the form of Jesus, experienced it with us. And that I don't find that anywhere and in any other religion of any sort. And because of that, then I'm willing to lean in and allow my Abba through people and through direct experience to join me in this loss. He gets to enjoy the benefit of my friend's presence now in heaven. But now I get to mourn the significance of the loss that I have in his absence. So anyway, that is all. I will pick up a few of these topics in the succeeding weeks here to come. And it will be reflections on and the importance of lament and various aspects of it. I hope that you find it encouraging and maybe even normalizing. I think there's a lot about this that we need to be reminded that this is a very, very normal human experience that we have when we invest in relationships like this. We'll get to some of the questions later. If you have questions, feel free to hit the website at sgi-net.org. There's a comment box at the bottom of the first page. Sign up to be part of the community, and then also send a comment or a question, and I'll be happy to see what I can do to answer it. But that's it for tonight. Thanks so much for joining me. And if you want to see any of the other resources or anything, go ahead and hit the website at sgi-net.org. And until next time, love you. Later. Bye.